This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, The Substance and Politics of Impeachment. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. On September 24th, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, announced a formal impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump, a dramatic and historic move that, contrary to the White House, she had been reluctant to take. However, when a whistleblower complaint showed that Mr. Trump sought to use the powers of his office to pressure Ukraine for help with his 2020 re-election bid by asking President Volodymyr Zelensky in a July 25th phone call to investigate the son of political rival Joe Biden, Speaker Pelosi said that Mr. Trump had crossed the line.
The president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. The president must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Now, a whistleblower is a person who reports wrongdoing inside the U.S. government and is protected by law from retaliation. This whistleblower's complaint was deemed both credible and urgent by the Inspector General and the Acting Director of National Intelligence. Federal law expressly states that it is illegal for a person to solicit, accept, or receive anything of value from a foreign national in connection with the United States election. In addition to soliciting election interference from a foreign government, there are two other critical components to the whistleblower's complaint, which was based on numerous White House sources. The whistleblower, who President Trump has unfairly vilified as a spy, also claims that White House officials ordered information about President Trump's phone call with President Zelensky to be removed from the classified server that typically stores such records to a hyper-secure code word server. Special protections like this are typically reserved for material of the gravest sensitivity, leading many observers to conclude that the White House was trying to conceal the transcript, which did not contain anything remotely sensitive from a national security perspective. In addition, a few weeks before the July 25th phone call, Mr. Trump had ordered the suspension of all military assistance to Ukraine, a move which bewildered many senior security officials. The fateful July 25th phone call, a rough transcript of which the White House has released, establishes that Mr. Trump linked the disbursement of $391 million of military aid to Ukraine to what he called a favor, finding compromising information about Vice President Joe Biden's son, who in 2014 had landed a lucrative board position with a Ukrainian gas firm. There is no evidence of wrongdoing by former Vice President Biden nor his son Hunter. The Ukraine scandal has embroiled President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and other administration officials, such as Attorney General William Barr, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker, among many others. The Trump administration denies any wrongdoing and, in a letter addressed to the Congress on October 8th, says that the July 25th phone call at the heart of the impeachment inquiry was, quote, completely appropriate, and condemns the impeachment inquiry as partisan and unconstitutional. The Trump administration falsely claims that the Democrats who control the House of Representatives are eager to impeach Mr. Trump and, quote, overturn the results of the 2016 election. However, the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the authority to check and balance the executive branch. That includes the power to issue and enforce subpoenas and launch impeachment proceedings. The Trump administration has defied nearly all requests for testimony and/or documents, as well as subpoenas that the House committees have issued. And now, even though a majority of Americans say they endorse the decision by House Democrats to begin an impeachment inquiry of President Trump, the White House says it will not cooperate with the inquiry. Well, joining us to discuss it all are our two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is the director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, that's a centrist think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left Washington think tank. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, this time I'm going to start with Jim Kessler. Jim, what a difference a month makes, right?
Yeah. Never a dull moment in this town.
You predicted on our last program that the Democrats will do hearings, but probably not, leading to an impeachment inquiry. Nonetheless, do you think that this impeachment inquiry is somehow precipitous or unjustified, partisan, unconstitutional, as the Trump administration alleges? Or do you think that the House Democrats perhaps didn't have a choice given the defiance of requests for documents and now, of course, this Ukraine phone call?
Yeah, they didn't have a choice. This is something that Speaker Nancy Pelosi did not want to have to do. There were definitely some Democrats in the House that wanted to do this and have wanted to do this for a long time. The president's behavior has been questionable at best long before this phone call. But the call and the rough transcript that was released of the call with the Ukraine president, I mean, when President Trump said the name Joe Biden in that call and said, basically, you know, investigate my political rival, that crossed a line that really the Democrats, and frankly, I think all good citizens would feel like we have to act on this. If the shoe were on the other foot and a Democratic president had done something like this, I would hope that Democrats would call for hearings and this sort of thing. But, you know, we're now at a new stage in this. Democrats got into this reluctantly, but they're in now with both feet.
Turning to you, John Fortier, Democrats did appear to get into this reluctantly, even though the White House claims that they've been eager to impeach President Trump from the day he won the election. But how do you see the current proceedings? Do you think that something was amiss, particularly in this phone call, and that the Democrats, based on that and the fact that the Trump administration has basically stonewalled on requests for documents, which is part and parcel of oversight, that the combination of those two led them to this point and that perhaps there was no other choice? How do you see it?
Well, I'm not sure I would call the Democrats' mood as reluctant. It's certainly true that the leadership was holding back what many members had wanted to do even before this came out. This is a new issue. It may relate to the old issues, and I think some members of Congress are connecting the dots. But I don't think that it wasn't as if many, many Democrats weren't already looking at the president and saying, you know, we'd like to impeach him. I think what it did was sort of pushed some of them over the edge and pushed the leadership to say, our caucus and even the leadership is now supportive of this. We're at the beginning of a process here. You made a good case, I think, in your opening for the Democrats' reasons for removing the president. We don't know a lot about what has all gone on. We're going to hear more.
I didn't really say that. I mentioned that they want to conduct impeachment, and you're the expert. Impeachment is not removal, but we can talk about that later.
Sure. Impeachment is not removal. And for Democrats who control the House of Representatives, they are the majority. They need only a majority, ultimately, to convict the president. They may get some Republicans. It is possible. But I guess I think we're early on. There are some questions. I agree. The mention of the word Joe Biden in the call, I think, is the most troubling of the issues here. I'm not sure right now I would make the call all about that. I think the president had a lot of things on his mind, many of which were involved with the 2016 election, the Mueller report, other sorts of investigations that he sees Ukraine as being involved in. Is that a legitimate area for him to pursue? There could be a case to be made. We don't know. But a lot has not come out yet. I see Republicans, some of whom say, you know, I'm not comfortable with this, but I'm not sure this rises to the level of impeachment. But there were also many other factors involved in the call. And, you know, at this point, the country's changed a bit, but I think it's still pretty divided on whether this is something that really merits looking at removing the president.
But, John, it's not just the fact that he asked for an investigation into Biden, even though he couched it as, you know, corruption in general. But by saying Biden, we know exactly what he meant. He also linked it pretty implicitly, if not explicitly, to the disbursement of this aid, which should never have been on hold. In other words, it should not be conditioned on President Zelensky doing this favor for him, which would be construed as election interference.
I'm not seeing the quid pro quo in the same way that you are. I think there's some debate, and maybe we will find that there is much more of a direct quid pro quo here. There are other things that the president wanted. I don't think this is all about Joe Biden. Joe Biden was mentioned a bit. It's a line that I don't think he should have crossed, and we'll have to see how important it is. But I don't think everybody looks at this and says, hey, this is automatically out of bounds. There are troubling things. There may be troubling things that rise to the level of you shouldn't have done that. But the American people, at least at this point, haven't made up their minds that this is something that is just so bad that the president should be removed from office.
No, they certainly haven't. And I certainly don't have an opinion on this. I'm just relating what experts are saying. So back to you, Jim Kessler. Certainly is a part of the foreign policy. The U.S. government has the absolute right to ask of a foreign power that's receiving aid that they do certain things, but this is political interference. It appears that way. But the other problem is that if Mr. Trump and the administration think they have really done nothing wrong, then why are they stonewalling on all these requests and for witnesses if they have done nothing wrong, if they have nothing to hide?
You know, they released this rough transcript and they thought this was going to solve their problems, and it just blew everything up. One of the senators from Maine, independent Senator Angus King, his staff reenacted that transcript. The call was 30 minutes. It took 10 minutes for them to reenact that transcript. So there's another 20 minutes in there. We don't know what's in there.
That is speculation at this point. We don't know that that's
okay,
the conversation.
But what we do know is that this transcript has been placed in a locked computer file that is for the most sensitive of conversations, that is really out of the ordinary. And yes, it probably is the most sensitive because it's most sensitive to the survival of Donald Trump. Something happened with this transcript that was different, because I talked to a lot of Democrats and I talked to a lot of moderate Democrats who really were not there on impeachment. This came out, the word Biden was mentioned, and it was mentioned three times, and it seems like the purpose of the call based on this rough transcript. And then you had seven freshman Democratic members of Congress, nearly all of them from very vulnerable congressional districts that can go Democrat or Republican, all of whom had served their country either in the military or in the intelligence services, call for impeachment. And that was, I believe,
The impeachment inquiry.
The impeachment inquiry, that's right. And that, I believe, was the watershed moment for the House Democrats. And that is why, with this, they are moving forward. And I do believe, in the end, the House will impeach the president and it will be move over to the Senate. Will any Republicans vote for it? I don't know, in the House or the Senate.
Well, I happen to have interviewed three of the freshman Democrats who co-authored that op-ed, Abigail Spanberger, Alyssa Slotkin, and Elaine Luria. And I agree with you. They're in swing districts. It was a very tough call for them. But because of their national security credentials, they said that it was this phone call that Trump may have violated the Constitution by seeking to use the very security assistance dollars appropriated by Congress to create stability in the world and to protect our national security interests for his own personal gain. That's how they read it. John 48, the point is we are where we are. So you're an expert on the impeachment. Let's explain to the audience that this is not a criminal investigation. Impeachment isn't inherently political process. It's the province of the Congress, of the House of Representatives. And so explain the steps and the way forward.
Well, constitutionally, there's not a laying out of a lot of the process, but the simple point is that the House of Representatives, by a majority vote, can choose to issue impeachment articles, meaning they could have a number of charges against a president, or they can remove other officers too, but in the case of a president, which by a majority vote would be then sent to the Senate, and the Senate would hold a trial. And if one of the articles of impeachment is voted favorably by a supermajority of the Senate, then the president would be removed from office. This likely takes a while. We've had only a few cases at the presidential level of this happening. Andrew Johnson, who was barely survived removal in the 1860s. Richard Nixon, who would have been removed by the Senate. And I think that's a key as we look forward today. If Republicans are persuaded over the course of what goes on in the House and in the Senate trial that the president is guilty and needs to be removed, a good portion of them could go to the president, as they did in the Nixon's case, and say, look, you're going to be removed. And that's why Nixon resigned. And then President Clinton's case, where public opinion did not shift dramatically, or maybe even shifted against Republicans a bit to say, hey, this was something that we shouldn't have done. We're overstating the case. We're making small foibles of the president into something about removing from office. I don't know how public opinion is going to go at this point. We've had a little bit of movement in public opinion towards people being more open to impeachment since this has come out. But the president still has about the same approval rating he did before. Republicans and Democrats are pretty divided. I agree with Jim that I expect that Democrats will find certain articles of impeachment to impeach him on. And then we will go to the Senate and we will have a trial, as the Senate Majority Leader said. The outcome of that trial, things are going to have to change in public opinion for the supermajority to actually remove the president.
And then you said something important. You said that the House of Representatives would take a vote. But interestingly, that would be after articles of impeachment. What the White House is saying now, that they need to take a vote to have an impeachment inquiry, in order for them to cooperate. But that is not true, is it not? That is not in the Constitution.
Well, it is not technically the Constitution, nor is it in the Constitution that the Senate has to have a trial. It is the usual course of action that we've seen in a few cases we've had, and that the House begins with a vote. I don't think there's a strong reason for it. Courts have been more deferential to the House of Representatives when they have an impeachment inquiry. Will courts say it's not quite as official if they don't have a vote on it? Nancy Pelosi just mentioned it. I think the Trump administration's point is, look, we need some due process, some fairness in how this impeachment goes on. We're going to have some process here, and they're pushing back very hard, I agree, but saying, look, we want some due process or we're not going to fully cooperate.
How do you see that, Jim? I mean, up until now, they haven't cooperated. What makes one believe that if the House of Representatives took a vote to launch an impeachment inquiry, which they really don't have to do, what makes anyone believe that the administration would suddenly cooperate? Is it just another smokescreen or excuse to stall?
It's possible. Look, I think it's in the administration's interest to drag this out. And I think that's what they will try and do, because I think the longer you drag this out, they feel like it becomes very, very complicated legal arguments as opposed to something very, very simple, which is he tried to coerce a foreign government through their president to investigate his political rival. That is a very simple story. And they want a very complicated story because that confuses people.
And anyway, other witnesses can come forward. Perhaps the White House can say, well, we're not going to allow so-and-so from the administration, this cabinet official, but other witnesses who are independent could provide information. Other whistleblowers,
The other administration may not prevail on their attempts to limit witnesses or limit information going. Look, in any case with the executive branch and Congress, there's a difference of opinion, there's a negotiation. Sometimes a court will get involved and say to the administration, you must do this. I think one advantage of the vote by the House would have been perhaps courts would be more willing to say, we don't accept your case of executive privilege, Donald Trump, you must give up this document. But look, I think it's at the margins. I think it's partly, we're going to have this negotiation, it's going to be drug out. One thing I will note, you know, in our previous impeachments, we actually had a special prosecutor or something more on the table. Yes, we had the Mueller report, but that is a separate set of issues. They may come in here. But Congress is trying to investigate this incident itself. And I frankly think that is a lot harder. It takes a lot more legwork to do, where a prosecutor has already taken all the depositions and put things in front of the Congress. Congress is trying to do that in a short period of time. I think it's difficult. So doing this quickly, while technically Democrats could vote anytime they want in the House for impeachment, they're going to want to have some of this to come out. And it's hard to imagine it takes less than a couple months to do an impeachment in the House of Representatives.
But we're coming up on the election. So, of course, time is of the essence. You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier. He's the director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, from whom you just heard, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. We're analyzing the substance and politics of the impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump. And I'd like to do a big shout out to a loyal listener, Jakatwenga from Upper Hill, Nairobi, Kenya. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, back to you, Jim, in the few minutes we have left, because I want to talk about very briefly the Mueller report, only insofar as that what was at the heart of the Mueller report is at the heart of this so-called Ukraine scandal, and that is election interference. But the Mueller report was the result of a criminal investigation, and it was deemed that there wasn't enough evidence between members of the Trump campaign and Russia to call it a conspiracy. And yet there were so many contacts, and he welcomed openly Mr. Trump, in a sense, interference from the Russians by saying, if you can find the emails of Hillary Clinton, and we know the contacts also were a sign of welcoming a foreign interference. So I think we have to keep that in mind, because even with this Ukraine situation, again, it looks like Mr. Trump would be doing Russia's bidding, because Russia is the enemy of Ukraine. It is interfering in eastern Ukraine. And so anything that would weaken Ukraine or make them vulnerable only strengthens Mr. Putin. And so I think we have a national security issue at heart, in addition to the election interference. And we're also seeing this week Mr. Trump going back on the protection of the Kurds and the so-called SDF by giving a green light to Turkey for doing an incursion, which would undo much of the good that was done in terms of combating ISIS. Many experts, everyone is saying, even Republicans are up in arms about the reversal of this policy. So there's a lot going on in the administration and a lot of concern, even if it doesn't rise to the level of impeachment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think there's a lot of threads there to draw together. But one of the things I think that is very interesting, and, you know, John made a very important point, that public opinion is really going to shape what happens on impeachment. And thus far, public opinion hasn't been great for Trump on this. He's lost some Republican support. Not a ton, but he's lost some. But what you're seeing with Trump's actions towards Syria and withdrawing U.S. troops and now what looks like a really aggressive Turkish invasion of those Kurdish regions in Syria, you're seeing Republicans in Congress really criticizing Trump in ways I've never seen that happen before. And it's almost as if they're saying, I'm going to put aside impeachment here for a second. Trump is making me very uncomfortable on his call with Ukraine. I'm going to pick another subject here that is not core to Trump's being, but I want to illustrate my dissatisfaction with him. So the tenor of the discourse and the criticism that you're hearing from Republicans on Trump over Syria and over the Kurdish people is like nothing I've seen during the administration. And just one more vulnerability that I see for Donald Trump here. The newspaper that has done the most to break stories about Ukraine and President Trump is the Wall Street Journal, which is a paper that is more traditionally conservative and certainly read by a lot of people who are Trump supporters. And I think there's some worry there that some of the leakage of Trump support on impeachment is coming from the high-dollar donors that help elect Republicans there and might kind of lead the party away from Trump.
So, John Fortier, what's your take on the Republicans' position vis-a-vis not just, of course, the phone call on which Senator Mitt Romney is probably among the only Republicans who came out and said this was terribly troubling. We know that others found it troubling but don't want to say too much. They're deflecting, they're silent. What about now, of course, this announcement without any consultation with the U.S. military that Trump wants to bring back U.S. troops, the few U.S. troops who were there helping the Kurds keep ISIS at bay, notwithstanding the destruction of the caliphate, and now allowing the Turks to go in? I mean, this has really created a lot of worry on the part of Republicans.
I do think the opposition to recent decision to essentially allow the Turks to go into Syria is getting strong pushback on the Republican side. You know, at the end of the day, I think Donald Trump has always had people in the Republican Party who don't like him, and especially on the foreign policy realm, he is really different than most of the foreign policy establishment. This goes against much of what they want. The only thing we can say, I think, though, is that Donald Trump is, and maybe very clumsily, drawing this line, which he drew in the last election, to say, look, I am not a George Bush. I am not somebody who's going to get us entangled. He has repeated the phrase of endless wars. That is not the position of most of the Republican foreign policy establishment, and they think and worry that this action will go very wrong. But it is something that he has been for, and I think believes somehow that he will go to the American people and think there is some resonance there that the elites aren't getting.
Back to you, Jim Kessler. Will the impeachment inquiry, do you think, backfire on Democrats and energize the Republican base, or do you see a different dynamic?
I think it'll probably energize both bases. This election is going to be decided in the middle. I do think that this helps Joe Biden in the nomination. And that is not the prevailing viewpoint on it, but I think that this really does set up the feeling that the person that Donald Trump is afraid of running against is Joe Biden.
You get the last word on this one, John Fortier.
If I had to guess, I think Jim's right that probably it will motivate both bases, but we don't know. I think we're at a very early stage of the process. You know, public opinion and elite opinion changed against Richard Nixon over the course of impeachment. It changed maybe in the other direction, or it certainly didn't hurt Bill Clinton during his impeachment trial. So ultimately, I think we just have to see a lot more come out.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Sidrock Franklin. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.